Today's Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Shabbos, which will begin on Daf Lamed Hey, and Be'ezus Hashem, if we have time, we'll finish the Perek, which is going to conclude on Lamed Vav Amud Beis, beautiful Perek of Amem Adlikin. I received a list of yard sites that we are learning Lili Ishmas. It's the catch-up for a couple of days. I just got the list now. So on March 26th, we're learning Lili Ishmas Isaac Wolf, Yehuda Ben Yitzchak Isaac. For March 27th, Israel Rozansky, Yisroel Ben Henoch Cohen. March 28th is for Philip Fivey Fuchs, Shraga Feivel Ben Yaakov. April 2nd, Faye Rothstein, Fega Bas Yaakov. April 3rd, Ella Beck, Leia Basev. Also on April 3rd, Eli Schiff, Elio Ben Yaakov Halevi. April 5th is Zelig Plout, Azriel Zelig Ben Naftali. Also learning, of course, Shabbos is Yud Nisan, is my father's yard site, Yosef Nisan Ben Yecheskel. Also learning for a couple of Refuah Shleimas. Unfortunately, there are many people that need a Refuah Shleima. We're learning for our member, Jack Tarzik. He should have a Refuah Shleima, Yisroel Yaakov Ben Zlota. As well, for a Refuah Shleima for Jackie Werner's father, it's Hashem. He should also have a Refuah Shleima, Ben Sion Ben Batya. Benjamin Viner. Kodesh Baruch Hu should help all those in need at this point in time. B'soch Shar Chol Yisrael. Okay, let us begin. At the end of yesterday's shiur, we brought down a machlokas between Rabbi and Rav Yosef as to what is the shiur for the Ben Hashmashos period of time, and one said it was 2/3 of a meal, one said it's 3/4 of a meal. We said the difference between them was 1/12 of a meal. So in that situation, we had Rabbah was giving the 9/12, the 3/4 of a meal, and Rav Yosef had the slightly smaller shear of 8/12, or 2/3 of a meal. So the Gemara now has an interesting parallel that in another situation, we have Rav Yosef giving the higher shear and Rabbah giving the smaller shear. V'chilupa b'chalta, in regards to a certain type of a container, a basket of some sort, a kaveris, Rashi says. A kaveris is literally a beehive, but it could be a natural beehive, or it could also be a basket that's shaped like a beehive. And here, in this situation, in regards to a basket, so Rabbah says, chalta bas trei kore, if a basket is large enough that it can hold 2 kor. A kor is 30 saw, so this would be 60 saw it could hold inside of it. Shari la taltula, it is not considered something that is so large that it loses its status of being a utensil. It's still considered a kli. A kli is not muktzah, and kli is allowed to be carried around. We'll have a little discussion later on the shiur today about how we define muktzah in regards to a kli. But for now, we'll say that it's not considered muktzah. But if it's bigger than that, ubas tlasla kore, if it was 3 kors worth, if it was able to hold 90 saw, so then osula totula, then it would be too big to be carried. It loses its status of being a kli, and in that situation, it would not be allowed to be carried on Shabbos. As Rashi says, if it's 2 kor, so then it's Toras Kli Olah, and if it's 3, Gedol Yosef Midayv Ein Toras Kli Olah. That's the opinion of Rabbah. On the other hand, Rabbi Yosef Amar, no, Bas Tlosa Kori Namishar, he says even if it's 3 kor, it's 90 saw that it can hold, it's still considered a Kli, and it's only if it's the larger shear, Bas Abar Kori, also if it's at 120, if it has over here such a large amount of saw in it, 4 kors worth, 4 times 320, it loses its status of being a kli. So that's just the opposite of what we had yesterday, where the shiurim, the larger and smaller one, were the opposite of what they are today. Amar Abaye, Abaye adds, "Boy minei demar bishas ma'isa." I once asked my rebbe, Abaye's rebbe was Rabbah. I asked him when I needed to carry something, is this considered a kli and I can carry it, or is it too big and it's not considered a kli? And he told me, "Vafilu bas trei kore lo shorli." And Rabbah had said at that point that even if it's 2 kor, that's too big, and it's not considered a kli. So this seems to be a little bit of a stricter opinion. Kiman, and who does this go like? Kahaitan, and that goes like the following Tanoic opinion. Did not, because we learned in the Mishnah, the Gemara in Kalin, the Mishnah in Kalin tells us, kaveris akash, you have this basket again that's made out of straw. Or kaveris akonim, or you have a basket that's made out of reeds. Or bor svino alexandris, or they need fresh water on a boat. Your boats are traveling out in the ocean, there's lots of water, but it's not potable. You'll die if you drink that water. So therefore, you used to have a fresh water reservoir. They used to put a big kli and put the fresh water in the boat. That's called the Borosvin Alexandris, these Alexandrian boats that had these reservoirs inside of them. So Afa Pisheshlam Shulayim, even though they have the container, they're a base kibble. The Gra takes out the words over here, Afa P, says that doesn't make any sense, and that in fact is not the gear, so that we find in this Mishnah. So he says, the fact that they have a shulayim, v'hei machzikos arboim saw belach, they're able to hold 40 saw of water, shehein korayim biyavish, which would be the equivalent, this is a liquid measure, you fill it up to the top, it doesn't heap over. But if you took the same amount in a solid measure, where you can have a heaping over, so then it can hold 2 kors worth, or 60 saw. So he says, this is tahorim. This is the opinion that Rabbi said, up to 2 kor, it's considered a utensil, but 2 kor or more, it's not considered a utensil, and therefore, so if it's not a utensil, it's considered attached to the ground, it's tahorim. So it's the opposite of what we said before, because it's not a utensil, so therefore it's tahorim, but it means that it's not a utensil. So this is the Tanoic opinion that Abaye said his Rebbe, Rabbi, told him. And we see from here as well, Omer Abaye, Shema Minoah, we see the halacha, haigutcha, the heaping up over, the amount that a solid can be heaped up over is tilsa havi. It's an extra third. So like we said, it's 40 of a liquid, and you can heap it up to 60, so the extra 20 is one-third of the total 60 over here. Why is this important? For mekach or memkach purposes. Gemara continues and says, "Avaya chazi l'rov, they call dove l'mariv." Now, in yesterday's Gemara, we saw that we said that the Bein HaShemashal starts when you see a certain change in the color of the sky. It gets redder and it gets darker. So we had said that it was talking about the Pnei Mizrach on the eastern side of the sky. So Abaye Chazil Rava, when Abaye was watching Rava, he saw the called Dove Lamarv. He looked out towards the western side. Now, why is he looking towards the western side? Rashi says Dove means Mabit on Erev Shabbos. Liros im Yeshom Admumis Cham. He wanted to see if the Bein HaShemashah's period of time was starting, but he looked west. So Omale. So Abaye asked Rava. He said, Bahatanya, we learned in the Brisa yesterday, Kozman Shepnei Mizrach Badimit, isn't it when the eastern sky is red? Why are you looking towards the west? So Rabbi answers, Amalei, Misarbis Pnei Mizrach Mamish, do you think it really means the Mizrach side? Which side is the sun setting on? The sun setting on the west. So he says, lo, obviously not. Panim Hamadimim is in Mizrach. The sun setting on the west is going to cause the redness to be present on the east. That's the first version of this discussion. Eger the Amrei, a second version. The Gemara often has two different versions of something. Lav Dafka, they always have a nafkamina, a practical difference between them. They're just different ways that the Gemara was recounted years later. And the Gemara was an oral discussion for hundreds of years. And only when Ravina or Ravashi actually edited and put it down, they sometimes didn't have the exact version that was said. They had two different versions. So here we have Eger the Amrei. Another version was not that Abaye asked Rabba, but Rabba, Chazil Abaye, Rabba saw that Abaye was looking over the koy dove l'mizruch, he was looking at the east. And Omale, so Rava told him, Misarvis pei mizruch mamish, do you think that it means he's supposed to look at the east? No, panim hamadim es ha-mizruch, it means he's supposed to look at the west and see where on the east it is lit up. The simonech, kafsa, and the way to remember this is like a window. When the window shines in, so you're looking at the light coming in from one side, but it shines in all the way to the other side. Okay. Mark continues and says, now we're going to have a little discussion of the length of the Bein HaShemashah's period of time that we already had and add on some new opinions. So yesterday we brought down Rav Nechemya Omer, Kidei Shehalech Odom Mishetishka Hachama Chatzi Mil. The amount of time that it takes for the Bein HaShemashah's is the amount of time that it takes a person to walk a half of a mil. Again, a mil is 2,000 amos, so a half a mil is 1,000 amos, and an average person walks roughly about 18 minutes to a mil, so this would be about 9 minutes. So Gemara says, Amri b'chanina, that's where we get the share of 18-minute matzah, because the amount of time that it takes to walk a mil, that's how long it takes the matzah to go and become chametz if you don't work with it. Again, there's some shiurim that say it's more than 18 minutes, up to 24 minutes. That's where you get some of the shiurim that we have. In any event, Amar Chanina says, "Haros leid dashiru shorabi nechaim." If you want to know practically how long this is, this Bein HaShemashah's is, yaniya chama brosha karmel. Let a person go up to the top of Har HaKarmel, and he'll see the sun still up there in the afternoon, and then quickly go down. V'yerid v'yitbo v'yam. He could go down from Har HaKarmel and go down in Mitovel in the Yam, and then v'yala, and then come back up to the top of the mountain. V'zeu shiur shor bin chaymi. That's the amount of time of the Bein HaShemashah's. So when you're at the top of the mountain, it's still light. When you get down to the bottom, you can be assured that that's the start over here of the Bein HaShemashah's period of time. When you tovel and you come back up, that's the total length of the Bein HaShemashah's period of time. That's what the Gemara is telling us over here. Amr Rechia said, since we're talking about being Tovel over here in the Yam, so he tells us an interesting din. Rechia says, if you want to see the Bear Miriam, of course, was a one-time nace that occurred during the Midbar, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a Sela, a rock, that was a traveling Be'er. Wherever they went, the Be'er went with them, and the water flowed out of the Be'er, out of the rock. So therefore, if you want to see where this rock is today, after the Midbar, where did it go? So it was put into the Yam. So Arotz Liros Be'er Shomirim. If you want to see the Be'er Shomirim, Yala the Rosh HaKarmel, go up to the top of Har HaKarmel, the Yitzben, look out to the sea. Again, the Mefarshim say which way you're looking. Some suggest you're looking toward the Mediterranean, and some say you're looking towards the Yama Kinaris. In any event, whichever way you're looking, V'yira Kimin Kivora B'yam, and you'll see this rock over there that is shaped like a sieve. A Kivora is a sieve, and you'll see that V'zuhi Be'er Shomirim. When you're looking up from the top of Har HaKarmel, you'll see this. That is the Be'er Shomirim. Again, this is a very esoteric idea. There are great Gedolim that have said that they've seen this, and that there's mystical ideas behind this, but this is the simple Gemara we're understanding. Finally, Amar Rav, Rav added on, Mayan HaMataltal Tor, that the Mayan, a spring, a well over here that is able to be carried is Tor. There's no such example of this except Vizel Be'er Shomirim. The only time we have an example of a spring, of a well that can be carried, it's the Be'er Shomirim. Now the Gemara continues to discuss the Bein HaShmoshos. Some Rav Yehuda and Rav Yehuda says the name of Shmuel. Bein HaShmoshos, the Rav Yehuda, during the period of time that's called the Bein HaShmoshos of Rav Yehuda, so then that period of time, Kohanim Tovabu, the Kohanim could go and go to the mikveh, again, a Kohen Gadol who's a Tvur Yom, so he has to go to the mikveh that day, and then he has to wait till Harav Shemesh. So if he's Tameh, he becomes a Tvur Yom, and then he waits till Harav Shemesh. So the Kohanim have to go during the daytime in order for them to become Tohar that night to eat Truma. So Gemara says, I don't understand this at all. You're telling me that according to this idea that the Bein HaShmoshos of Yehuda is allowed to go be Tavol. So we don't understand it. Laman. Elam or Rav Yehuda, if it's the period of time that Rav Yehuda says that you're allowed to go to the mikvah because it's the Bein HaShmoshos, so that doesn't make any sense. Sveiko, how could he go to the mikvah then? Maybe it's day, maybe it's night. So that can't be Rav Yehuda's opinion. So Gemara says, Taka, you're right. Ella, Bein HaShmoshos to Rav Yehuda. We're talking here about the Bein HaShmoshos period of time of Rav Yehuda. L'Rav Yossi, Kohanim Tov L'Bo, according to Rav Yossi, the entire period of time of Rav Yehuda is still daytime, and it's only some point later on that Rav Yossi says, Harifayin, that's when considered Bein HaShmoshos is over. That's Harifayin with a split second, blink of an eye, and therefore up until that point, it's still day. So this is going according to Rav Yossi, according to the time of Rav Yehuda, he says that's daytime. Where it says, Pshita, you know, obviously, he holds that it's after the Bein HaShmoshos of Yehuda, so of course, during the Bein HaShmoshos of Yehuda, he holds that it's daytime. Where it says, nope, not so obvious. Smile, detain, I might have thought, Bein HaShmoshos of Rav Yossi, Meshach Shayach with Rav Yehuda. You might have thought that the period of time that Rav Yossi says is Bein HaShmoshos is sometimes within the Bein HaShmoshos time of Rav Yehuda. So that's Rav Yehuda's period of time is from 6 o'clock to 6:13. So, we don't know where in that period of time is the Harifayin that Rav Yossi says. So you might have thought it's the beginning, you might have thought it's the end, Kamash Vulan, the Shlim Bein HaShmoshos of Rav Yehuda. No, it's at the conclusion of the entire time of the Bein HaShmoshos of Rav Yehuda, only then, Bohod Damasco Bein HaShmoshos of Rav Yossi. So therefore, the Chiddush over here is that the entire period of time that Rav Yehuda says is Bein HaShmoshos, Rav Yossi says it's Vaday Day. And therefore, as long as the Kohen went and Tovled before the end of Rabbi Yehuda's Bein HaShmoshos period of time, Rav Yossi would say it was daytime, and therefore the Harifayin that comes right after that, so then now it's night, and therefore the person was troubled during the day, and now he has Harif Shemesh, and he can eat the Trum at night. Amar Rabbi Baruch Han, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Halachik Rav Yehuda Linyan Shabbos. We paskin over here like Rav Yehuda in regards to Hilchos Shabbos, Halachik Rav Yossi Linyan Truma. But we paskin like Rav Yossi in regards to the Din of Truma over here, which the Gemara will now explain. Bishlam Halachik Rav Yehuda Linyan Shabbos. We understand Luchumra. It means that you have to assume over here that every second of the Bein HaShmoshos, according to Rav Yehuda, could be Shabbos ready, so you can't do any Malacha during this period of time. So, L'chumra, that's clear. Avolini and Truma, Mayi, what do you mean that we say that we paskin over here that the Locha is like Rav Yossi regards to Truma? What exactly is that? Someone says, Ilay Melatvila, if you're telling me that it has to go and when you Tovel over here to have the to status of now to become from Tommy to be a Tvur Yom, so then, Seiku, how can you say that he's allowed to go over here? According to Rav Yehuda, that is not allowed. That's a Suffolk Yom. We turn to Yom Beis. Ella, it's talking about La'achilas Truma. And if you want to go and eat Truma, in other words, the La'achli Kohanim Truma on the Shlim Bein HaShmoshos of Rav Yossi. It still may be daytime according to Rav Yehuda. So therefore, they can't eat the Truma because according to Rav Yehuda, it could be night. So technically they could. But since according to Rav Yossi, it's definitely day, they can't eat the Truma until the conclusion of the Harifayin that signifies the end of the Bein HaShmoshos period according to Rav Yossi. And now it's Vaday Laila, only they have to hold like Lamachmir, like Rav Yossi, to say when you can actually eat the Truma. Amar Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Kochav Echad Yom, Shnayim Bein HaShmoshos, Shlosha Laila. How do you know when it's nighttime? So if you can see one star, so you can see one star during the day. It's still daytime. If you see two stars, so that's called the Vayne Hashemashos period of time. And it's only when you see three stars, now you can say it's definitely nighttime. That's when people have the expression, oh, have you seen three stars yet? Is it Eish Shabbos? So that's where this comes from. And we have a braisa to support the Amora, Rehuda Amar Shmuel, and the braisa says as follows. If you see one star, it could still be daytime outside. Shnayim Ben Hashemashos. If you see two stars, then it's the Ben Hashemashos period of time. And Shlosha Laila. And when you see three stars, you know it's Vade Laila. And on this bright summer of Yossi, he adds, and he says, Lo Kochav Gadol L'Manir Mayom. Not talking about large stars. Sometimes you can see Polaris, the North Star, even during the daytime, it's so bright. Not talking about stars on the size of the North Star. Lo Kochav Katanim Sheinir and Elva Laila. And we're not talking about those stars that are barely visible, even in a pitch black night. That's not what we're talking about. What are we talking about here? One, two, or three stars, Ella Beinonim. You have to see three middle-sized stars in order to be night. That's where the expression comes. When people say, is it dark outside yet? Is it night yet? If you see three middle-sized stars, then you know it's nighttime. Nadi Mor says, Amr b'yosi b'rivizvida ha'osim malacha b'shnei ben hashmashos. If somebody does malacha during the ben hashmashos, for example, he did it on Friday, Ben Hashemashos, and he does Malacha at 6 o'clock. That's when the Ben Hashemashos is on Friday. And he does 6 o'clock on Shabbos afternoon, Ben Hashemashos period of time. So, Chayiv Chatas Mimonoshov. Such a person is definitely over Shabbos. Because if you want to say that 6 o'clock was really daytime, so Friday afternoon he wasn't over anything, so then 6 o'clock on Motzi Shabbos is not Motzi Shabbos. It's still Shabbos afternoon. Because if 6 o'clock was still Friday, so then 6 o'clock on Saturday afternoon is going to be Shabbos. So he's a Chayiv Chatas. Oh, and if you want to tell me that, no, 6 o'clock Shabbos afternoon, it's already Sunday, it's already halachically considered Saturday night, so then that meant 6 o'clock on Friday afternoon was also considered Friday night, Shabbos already. So Mimonim Shach is going to be over Chatas, either for the 6 p.m. on Friday afternoon or the 6 p.m. on Saturday afternoon. Mimonim Shach, one of them is definitely going to be Chayiv Chatas. Amalei Rav L'Shamei, Rav said to his Shamish, Atun, you, meaning you as a Shamish, who is not a Talmud Chacham, the Lokim B'Luchu, B'Shiur the Rabbanu. You're not an expert over here in knowing the Shiurim of the Chazal. So for somebody like you who's not an expert, when you see Adashimsha, Areish Dikli, when you see the sun is now able to be seen at the very top of the palm trees, so then Aslu Shoga, then light the Shabbos candles, because it's going to be for Shabbos very, very soon. Okay, that's great on a nice sunny day. If it's a cloudy day and you can't see the sun, so then what? So he says, if you're in the city, Chazi Tarnagola, go and look to see if you can find a rooster. And if you're not in the city, Bedavra, if you're out in the wilderness someplace, Orve, see if you can see any ravens. And Inami, or alternatively, look for Adane. Adane, Rashi tells us, is a certain type of a gourd. Asid, Rashi says, it's called something like a melon, but Alin Shalo Notin Letzarachama, and because of the photosensitivity of the light, so the light will make the flowers go towards the light, and therefore, in the Shachar's time, it will be bent towards the east, and in the middle of the day, it's standing up straight, and in the evening time, it's bending towards the west. So when you see it going in a certain horizontal towards the west side, then you know that it is definitely about to be over, to be starting of Shabbos, and you should light the candles. What was the simon with the rooster? So Rashi says it sits on certain types of boards right before the end of the day, and likewise the ravens, they also sit in the fields in a certain way right before the end of the day. So when you see those in those positions, you can be pretty certain that then it's about to become Shabbos and go light the Shabbos candles. Now we have an interesting custom the Gemara brings down, which some communities today have reinstituted this custom about blowing shofar, blowing a horn on Erev Shabbos to let people know that Shabbos is coming. Tell everybody, the Braisa says, Sheish Tekios Token Erev Shabbos. The original custom was that they would blow six blasts to let people know when to stop working on Erev Shabbos. The first one, Rishon, Lahafti Alasa'om Imlocha Shabbosodos, the people that are way out in the fields, so that would be the early warning because they have to take a long walk back to their homes. So they would blow the shofar and everybody would stop working in the fields. They're mostly farmers and they'd have to leave the fields and come back home. The second blast was for the people that lived closer to their houses. They lived in the city, but their stores were in the city, so they didn't have to go that far. So they could work a little bit longer, and as soon as they heard the second blast, all the stores would close, and the people in the city would go home. The third blast, Shlishis, Ladlikasneh, that would tell them it's getting close to Shabbos, go light the Shabbos licht. That's the opinion of Rav Nosson. Rav Nosson, however, disagrees. They wear shlishis lachlutz tefillin. They used to wear their tefillin all day, even while they were working. They would wear their tefillin all day, so they would have to take off their tefillin before it was Shabbos. We don't wear tefillin on Shabbos, so therefore the third blast, according to Rav Nosson, was not to light the candles, but to go and take off your tefillin. dog before cotton, before they would blow any more blasts, they would wait enough time that a person, if he wanted to, could go and roast a little fish over here, which is a very short time for that to occur. Or alternatively, similarly, they would take a piece of dough and they would attach it to the oven. They would push it on the slab of the oven, so to say, and then they would peel it off. That's called ridiyas hapas. So this was a simple, also very short activity that they still had time to do before Shabbos. And then they would blow the last, this was after the third shofar blowing, and then they would blow the last three blasts when this was done, v'tokeya, tkiya, meiria, atrua, v'tokeya, and then v'shovis, and then Shabbos would come and everybody would begin the Shabbos. That's where the six blasts over here, we'll see, it was a tkiya, atrua, tkiya, tkiya, atrua, tkiya, and we said what each of them was against. Rishon Galil disagrees. And he says, Ma naselema bablium, oh, those bablium's, they do it all wrong. Shetokin umariyim, and vishovsin mitoch mariyim. So they blow first, according to him, a tekiah, and then they blow a trua, and then they stop after the trua. In other words, they seem to not blow enough blasts. So the Gemara says, what? Tokin umariyim? Havalechamisha. If they did this, so then they'd only have five blasts, because the first three we'd heard about, and then the last two, you're saying is only two and not three, so then they only have five blasts. But the Bryce had said sheish tkios. So what's going on? Someone says you're right. Elisha token, v'chozer v'token. The last three they did tekiah, tekiah, and then teruah. That's wrong. Umerian v'shovsim mitoch merian, and their last blast would be a trua, which is wrong. Gemara says, why did they do it this way? However, that's the way their fathers did it, so they carried on the tradition. We very, very much believe in following Masorah, and that was the Masorah that they had. In the Maral, in his Sefer the Guraye, and also in the Agos Hayavitz, he brings down what was Rav Shimon Gamliel so upset about. Why was he upset that they stopped at Trua? Who cares? So the answer is, by stopping at Trua, so this would definitely show that it was the end of the entire series. Because if they stopped at Tekiah, so some people might have missed the first Tekiah in the second group, and therefore they'll think that this is the first Tekiah if they ended off with the Tekiah. So therefore, when they ended off with the Trua, there could be no mistake. Okay, in any event, the Gemara continues and says, Masdei le'Rav Yehuda, le'Rav Yitzchak Barei. Rav Yehuda told his son, Shnia lahadlik asener. He said that a different order. He said the second blast was to tell people that they should go like the Shabbos Lecht. And who does this go like? Come on, Loka Rinosim, Loka Yehuda Nasi. It doesn't go like either of the two opinions that we had. We had one that said it was the third blast, and one that said it was the fourth blast that they lit the Shabbos Lecht. So where it says, Elo Shlishas lahadlik asener. It goes like the opinion that says, if they're the third one, you blow. And the idea is, Kiman, Kirbi Nosin. He actually held like Rabbi Nosin, and not after the second one, but after the third one. The next Bryce is going to expand upon what we just said. Tanavir Rishmol, according to the Bryce that learned in the base Medrash of Rishmol, Sheish Tekios Tokim Erev Shabbos, again, they blew six blasts on Erev Shabbos. What were they? Hiskel is called Kirishona, the first time they blew the first shofar blast. Nimnu Omdi Masodi Mila Dor Milachrosh, the people out in the field, the farmers, they would stop over here from doing all of their hoeing and all of their plowing because they had to come in. And they stopped doing any other work out in the fields. They had a long trip back into town. However, the people that were working in the fields that were closer to the town, they didn't have to stop until the Rechokim came, because we wanted them all to come back at the same time. So nobody would think that there was still time to go. Everybody would come back at the same time. The stores were still open because they were in the city. And they had their shutters over here that were, they would normally shutter up the stores, but they would use them as a table. So they still had them out as a table and not as a shutter. Once they blew the second shofar blast, however, now they put the tables, took them away as being tables, and they put them back as being shutters. And they locked up their stores. Now people were still allowed to cook at this time. There still was enough before Shabbos that they could have their hot food being cooked on their stoves. And they could have the various pots on the stove. It's still allowed to cook. Not a problem. It's enough before Shabbos. Now they blew the third blast. Hiskel is called Kiel Shlishis. Now Silek HaMasalek. Now everybody had to stop what they're doing, and they would stop cooking. They would insulate whatever they needed to insulate that they're allowed to do. And in fact, they would go and light the Shabbos licht at this point in time. Then they would have the same like the other brides. They would wait a little bit of time, enough time that they could go and cook a little fish, or to throw the slab of the dough onto the oven walls and be able to have it baked a little bit. And then they'd blow the last three blasts with tokea, merieva tokea, this shoveis. Like we said, they would blow the tkia, trua tkia, according to the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamaliel, and they would then rest. Then it was Shabbos. But if somebody went to actually go and light after the sixth blast were blown, it's still allowed. Madlik, it's not it Shabbos. Why? Shari Nosu Chacham Shir. The rabbis gave a little like extra special time over here, a little bit extra time for the chazan echneses, lohu shofar lebeitzo. The guy is blowing the shofar, so he's not allowed to carry that. He had to blow it in a place where everybody in the town could hear it. He couldn't blow it from his house, and therefore, they had to make sure that he had enough time to carry his shofar back to his house. So therefore, that period of time, it wasn't yet Shabbos, so you could still light candles right after that sixth blast was blown. However, the Gemara says not everybody agreed to that. Omelo, one of the chachamim told them, we don't know who it was. Others say Omelo, that Girsa is, it, they told him, not one specific person, if you're doing this in Cain, we have a famous rule, Nasata Derech L'Shirim. We don't allow things to be dependent upon what one person might do or as another person might do. Shirim have to be exact. It can't be dependent upon, well, this guy walks this fast, this guy walks that fast. So it has to be over here that a person has one shear for something. It can't be multiple shearim. So therefore, if you're telling me it depends how long the person takes to walk back from his house, so then you're setting up a problem over here that you're setting up different amounts for different people. Ella, what is the right answer? They kept a special little cubby over there that he could put, the person who was blowing shofar could put his shofar in over there that it wouldn't get lost. He put his shofar over there. So he's not allowed to carry on Shabbos neither a shofar nor you're allowed to carry a trumpet. Now, Moore says, well, Tanya, wait a second. Why aren't you? Shofar metaltel. Another bride says, you're allowed to carry a shofar in Shabbos. Albeit, but Chatzos would say to Metaltim, you're not allowed to carry trumpets, but you are allowed to carry shofar, so what's the problem if you carry the shofar? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yosef, it should be Rav Yosef, not Rav Yossi. So the Gemara says, there's no steer over here. Lokasha, kam b'yochid, kam b'tzibur. It depends who we're talking about over here. When you're dealing with a yochid, so it's his private shofar, so it's not muksa. We'll see in a moment, it's not muksa, because you could use it as a bottle to give water to a baby. But if it's a tzibur's shofar, so then you're not allowed to go carry it because the tzibur doesn't allow you to go take their tzibur's property and use it for your own personal usage, even though it's to feed a baby. So therefore, the braisa that says you can carry the shofar, that's talking about it. It's not muksa because it's your own personal shofar. The braisa that says that you're not allowed to carry it is because it's muksa because you can't use it to feed a baby. Morris questions it still. Amalei Abayi, he says to Rav Yosef, Ubiyochid Lamai Chazi, what's this shofar good for when you're saying that a person can carry it, it's not muktzah? Again, we're not talking here about a problem of carrying, we're talking about a problem of muktzah. So why is he allowed to use it? Why is it not muktzah? It's a shofar. So he explains, Hol, V'roi L'gamea B'mayim Latino, return to the Lamed Vav Amud Aleph, since you can use it as a bottle for a baby. The child can be fed, that's why it's not muktzah. So Morris says, so why does it make a difference if it's personal, a personal property or a tzibur property? A tzibur nami, chazil gamel etino koni. The tzibur has an obligation to feed a baby. So why doesn't it have the obligation over here to feed the little poor baby over here for the tzibur? And furthermore, v'su, had the tanya, we learned another braisa, kishen shel metaltel as a shofar, kach metaltel as a chatzotros. This braisa says you can even carry the chatzotros over here. Now, we have three different braisas over here, mani. So who does this one go like? So where it says, Elolo Kasha. In fact, there is no Kasha over here. There are three different opinions over here. Harab Yehuda, Harab Shimon, Harab Nechemia. These are the three famous opinions that we have of Muktzah. Rabbi Nechemia is the most machmir one. Rabbi Nechemia's opinion is, you're only allowed to carry a kli for the purpose that that kli is normally designated for. So, for example, if you have a hammer, so you're not allowed to use a hammer on Shabbos. It's Muktzah. There's no had to purpose for a hammer on Shabbos. Aye, there are reasons you might want to use a hammer to smash a walnut. Rabbi Nechemia says it's muktzah. And Rabbi Shimon says, no, any kli that can be used for anything over here is not considered muktzah. If it's a kli, no matter what, it is not considered muktzah. That's the famous sheet of Rabbi Shimon who says that there is no concept of muktzah with rare exceptions. And then you have the in-between shita, which is normally a machmir shita, but it's mekel compared to Rav Nechemia. The Yehuda says that normally you're not allowed to handle a muktzah kli over here, but only under certain situations are you allowed to. So this muktzah kli over here is not allowed to be handled because it's a kli shel machdis. It's mostly used over here for dvar masurim, and therefore there is no heter to use it for a dover heter. Rav Shimon says, as long as there's a heter, you're allowed to use it. And Rav Nechemia says, no matter what, you can't use it except for the exact purpose it's supposed to be used for. So now let's understand this. When it says umai shofar nami, when we said in Rav Nechemya's Braisa that you're not allowed to use either one, chatzotzros, it's actually referring to chatzotzros, kidrav chista, in following what Rav Chista said, Rav Chista, hanitlos mile. There are three things over here. Ishtani shmayu mikichara beis hamikdash. There are three things that change their names over time. And when we said over here that you're not allowed to carry shofar, it was even talking over here, according to Rav Nechemya, about chatzotzros. You can't carry anything over here, not a shofar, nor chatzotzros. Why is that? There are name changes over here. And one of the name changes, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, over time, things changed. Instead of calling a shofar, they called it a chatzotzros. So chatzotzrata, shofar, is now called a shofar. And a shofar changed its name to be called the chatzotzros. Who cares? L'may nafkimina? Again, l'shofar shal Rosh Hashanah. You have to know that on shofar Rosh Hashanah, when they call it a shofar, you have to know what they mean. So it can't be called the shofar when they mean the trumpet. You have to know exactly what you're saying. There are other things that were changed as well. So Gemara says, Arava, Tzatzafa, Tzatzafa, Arava. These two things also change around. There was a certain type of a plant known as an Arava, and there's a certain type of plant known as a Tzatzafa. They're similar to each other. One is kosher for the Arba Minim, and one is not. So their names switched as well. When it was called an Arava, they really meant a Tzatzafa, and what they called a Tzatzafa, they really meant an Arava. Over time, it changed. Again, who cares over here? L'may nafkimina, again, for Lulav. A real Arava must be used. So if they call the Tzatzafa the real Arava, so then you have to know what they're talking about. And finally, Pesora and Pesarta, those two things changed around. That what was originally called a table, a Pesora, was now called a Pesarta, a smaller table. A Pesarta was called a smaller table, was now called a Pesora, a larger table. Again, who cares? L'may nafkamina, why are you telling me a semantics lesson over here? L'mecha chomemta. When you're buying something, you say you want to buy a table, so if you specify a Pesora, you're going to get a Pesarta when they change the name and vice versa. There were other changes as well. Amar Baye, Afanu Nomar, Huvlila, and Bekasi. Bekasi, Huvlila. There are certain parts of the four stomachs of the animal that are called different names. One of the parts is called the Huvlila, and one is called the Bekasi. So these names also got switched around over time. Again, Lamai Nafgamina, what's the halacha, Lamaisa significance of this change over here? So Gemara says, it depends. Certain of them, well, if they're punctured, will make it in the animal into a trefa. And other ones, it's not going to make it into a trefa. So this, the Nafgamina, is Lamacha Chinimsis, but all the Besakosos. If you find a needle in the thickness of the lining over here, the Besakosos. So the Mitzad Echod Ksher, if it only goes through one side, it doesn't come out the other side, it's not a through and through puncture, so then it's still kosher. But if it goes through and through, Bishneitzdad, and then it's a trefa. So you have to know which is called the Besakosos and which is called the Huvlila. That's the Nafkamina. Finally, we conclude the paragraph with the following words of Ravashi. Af Anu Nomar. We also had another one. Bavel is called Bursif, and Bursif is called Bavel. The names of these places changed over time. And the Gemara concludes, why is hith the Nafkamina? We turn to the Omen Beis, the Nafkamina, Legite Noshim. When you're writing a get, Rahman al-Islam, for a woman who needs to be divorced, you have to make sure that everything is done correctly. You have to have the right names, including the right place. With this, we conclude the wonderful parak of B'mem Adlikin, Hadron Alecha B'mem Adlikin, Hadron Alecha B'mem Adlikin, Hadron Alecha B'mem Adlikin. Everybody should have a wonderful Shabbos HaGadol.